I have a loud voice, so I'm not at all worried about being heard. I really want to thank the organizers for inviting me here. It's a real honor to be on this panel with Dave and Shadi and to be speaking to all of you. And I just want to really add my congratulations to you on the artist statement. I was so inspired when I saw that. And, you know, I think to get 500 artists to sign on was just a major accomplishment. So props to you all. I want to talk a little about what QUIT does, and then I'm going to talk a little about how we do it, and then at the end I want to talk a little about why we do it, as why we exist, as, feel it's important to exist as a queer group working for Palestine Solidarity. But I'm going to start with a little history. And so QUIT started in November of 2000, so just after the beginning of the Second Intifada. It was sort of a reincarnation of a group that we had during the first Gulf War in 90 and 91, when many of you were not quite born, I think. But at that time, we had a group called, during the buildup to that war, we started a group called Dykes and Gay Guys Emergency Response, DAGGER. And DAGGER was a group that included people, a lot of people who had been involved in the movements for liberation in Latin America and Central America especially, and also many people who were active in the AIDS activist movement. It was a very activist, radical time in the queer movement. The AIDS activist movement was very active, and also Queer Nation, which was a sort of short-lived broad gay liberation, gay and lesbian, trans liberation group in the States. So at that time, we had a march of over 1,000 people to oppose the war when it broke out of LGBT people. So that was a very radical time. The 2000 was not such a radical time in the queer community. So we were mostly a small group of friends who were going, but we had remained active. DAGGER was part of the anti-war movement that very much supported linkage, as it was called then. That is, making sure that the war that the US was prosecuting in Iraq was understood in the context of what was going on in Israel and Palestine, and that these were part of one imperialist project in the region, and that you couldn't solve one problem without solving the other, which was a popular position at that time. But unfortunately, everybody sort of said, okay, the Iraq war is going to, you know, when the Iraq war is over, then we'll deal with Palestine. But unfortunately, they didn't. But we continue to be active on, many of us as individuals continue to be active on the Palestine issue during the Oslo years. So when the Second Intifada broke out at the end of 2000, we were among the first people to show up and say, you know, what can we do, and to become involved in demonstrations. And the movement in the Bay Area, the Arab movement, the Palestinian-led movement, was somewhat in disarray in 2000, based, I think, on tensions that had arisen during the Oslo years. And so they took kind of a while to get organized. Consequently, most of the demonstrations that there were to go to were organized out of the Muslim community. And at one of those demonstrations in early November, we were there, a handful of us were there with our ancient banner that said, from the first Gulf War, that said U.S. out of the Gulf, Israel out of occupied Palestine. It's pretty small at the bottom. It said Lesbians and Gays Against Intervention, which was our old name, a name of a group we hadn't used in a long time. And we were asked to leave that demonstration, to either take down our banner or leave. Because some of the leadership of the Muslim community that had organized it felt that lesbian and gay people were not welcome, were not part of the movement for global justice. And I want to say flat out that many Muslim people did not agree with that and said to us that we should ignore them, but we didn't feel comfortable ignoring the leadership of the demonstration, so we did leave. And so we would have, of course, wanted to have our own organization anyway, because we always have queer groups, because that's what we like to do. But that motivated us, and shortly thereafter, a couple weeks after that, we called together some people who had been active in DAGGER and formed QUIT, Queers Undermining Israeli Terrorism. We have always had a BDS focus. We started focusing on BDS immediately as soon as we formed in 2000, or certainly by the beginning of 2001. One of our first actions was putting stickers on Israeli matzah, on boxes of Israeli matzah at a local grocery store, and handing out leaflets saying that people should buy their matzah elsewhere and why, and that it's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel. Then we and some other groups in the area got together to see if we could get our local co-op grocery store to deshelve Israeli goods, which we did briefly, but then it sort of exploded into a long and kind of sad story that I'm not going to go into here, but there's a paper that I've written called The BDS Approach, the BDS the Quit Approach, and you can get it on the table, one of the tables outside, and it sort of goes into some of what I feel we did wrong in that, in organizing that campaign. But you know, one of the things at that point, we sort of felt like, okay, not only was this not working that well, but it wasn't that satisfying to us because it wasn't very queer. So we wanted to do some stuff as queer people. So we decided to, you know, what can be more queer than theater? So we started thinking about theater actions to do. And we got the idea, well, first we got the idea that I wanted to settle on the lawn of the Israel Action Center at UC Berkeley, because they were always defending Israel and defending Israeli settlements, and you know that the Jews had a right to this land because we were oppressed in Europe. And so I thought, well, you know, if they think that it's okay for oppressed people to take land that belongs to another oppressed people, then maybe they won't mind if we take some of theirs, because queer people are oppressed. But we couldn't do it. We just couldn't do it where we wanted to do it, because it just wasn't going to work logistically. So we looked for another target, and we decided on Starbucks, which the owner and founder of which had is a very active Zionist, gives a lot of money to Zionist organizations, and had at that time just opened a series of stores in Israel. So we went to a Starbucks in downtown Berkeley, and we planted some fake olive trees and said we were making the concrete bloom, and we took a little wading pool and we filled it up at their water fountain, you know, sort of stole their water to fill our swimming pools. And we went into the Starbucks and made announcements that this was queer only, you know, that we were claiming this land, that this was queerly, and we needed a cafe. It was a cafe without people for people without a cafe, and anybody who wasn't queer had to leave. And we had a proclamation from the former mayor of San Francisco giving us the right to settle in Berkeley forever. And, you know, this was the historic land of the fruits and the nuts. I just want to say that this was an action that was a little obscure to the people actually playing chess and studying in the cafe. Nobody quite could figure out what we were doing, but it played very well on the internet and sparked copycat actions from London to Sydney. And of course, because of us, the Starbucks chain in Israel failed and they pulled out of Israel. So then we needed another target. And we decided on Estee Lauder. The president of the Jewish National Fund at that time and until last year was Ron Lauder, who's the chairman of Clinique, which is one of the subsidiaries of Estee Lauder. And he's obviously one of the sons of Estee Lauder. So we created Estee Slaughter. We introduced the products Atrocity Cover Up, Bloody Hand Cream, Lip Balm, and if you look on the table in the back, you'll find the wall condom, which really works, nothing gets through it. So we would do product giveaways, and you'll also find a few rare samples of the classic scent of Occupation. Except that actually the little vials in the Occupation folders are empty. I admit it, because some people, we have a lawyer in our group, and she was afraid that if we actually put some bad smelling scent in it, that somebody would say that they got sick and, you know, we would have a big legal problem. So we didn't do that. But we would do product giveaways outside of Macy's and dress up, and that was really fun. And, you know, we got really good feedback from it, but it wasn't, I mean, the constituency that we were reaching wasn't all that queer. Like, you know, we decided that it would be really nice if we could find like a sex toy manufacturer that was having their products manufactured in Israel, but we just couldn't really find it. So we decided that the cultural boycott offered perhaps more opportunity for targeting a specifically queer constituency than the consumer boycott. And so we started looking for ways to pursue the cultural boycott, because obviously we know how influential queer people are in the cultural industries. And so one of the first things that we did was we slightly disrupted a showing of the film Yossi and Jagger, which is an Israeli film about two Israeli soldiers who fall in love while serving on the Lebanon border. You don't see any Lebanese people in the film. You don't really hear anything about the 19,000 people that were killed. So we actually didn't disrupt the showing of the film, but we got up on stage as the credits were rolling with banners. And that action actually, like, people started clapping. And we sort of looked around to see, was something else happening that we behind us? But no, people were actually clapping for us. People who had paid money, you know, to pack the theater. It was a sold-out theater at the LGBT Film Festival. Like, the crowd was about evenly split between people who yelled at us to get down, not to politicize the film festival. Like, there's ever been an LGBT film festival in the world that wasn't political, and people who were cheering for us. So we did that, and eventually we decided that something that would be good for us to focus on was the queer film festival in general, which was getting sponsorship from the Israeli consulate every year. So every year, as you sat there waiting for your movie to start, you would see thanks to all the sponsors, and the logo of the Consul General of Israel would come up on the screen. And so we started a petition. We sort of, you know, started circulating a petition. We circulated it very quickly because we had started kind of late in the year. We circulated this petition, got about 100 signatures, and sent them a letter with 100 signatures. And they actually responded, which we didn't necessarily expect them to, saying that they recognized that there were some serious concerns about Israel's human rights record, and there were also some serious concerns about our own government's human rights record, and they had discussed it and decided unanimously to continue their relationship with the Israeli consulate. And that probably would have been the end of it, at least for that year or whatever. I mean, not for us, but as far as they were concerned, except that there's a reporter at the local gay paper, one of the local gay papers, the Bay Area Reporter, who's very supportive of QUIT and of BDS. And he wanted to write an article about it, and he called them up. So then they said, oh, well, you know, we haven't finished discussing this, and we'd really like to dialogue with QUIT. And so he told us that, and so we called them up, and we had a meeting with them, at which there were a couple of Arab queers participating who were members of Frameline. That is, they pay to be members of the organization that puts on the film festival every year and, you know, give money. And they said, well, you know, it makes us feel excluded when we have to sit there waiting for our movie and see Consul General of Israel on the screen. It makes us feel excluded from an event in the queer community. And that had a really big impact, I think, because, you know, the argument that everybody wants to make is, well, we're just trying to include everybody. And so the fact that people were sitting there saying, we're part of your community and we feel excluded, was probably pretty important in the fact that the next year when the program came out, Consulate of Israel was not listed among the sponsors. And so this reporter called them and checked it out, and they said, oh, well, it was just a coincidence, of course, that, you know, usually the consulate would sponsor a filmmaker to come and speak, and there just didn't happen to be any who wanted to come that year. So that was fine, you know. So we took that as an invitation to leaflet, and we made little ballots, like people vote at that. Now they do it all by text, but at that time, that was 2 years ago, they still used paper ballots to vote for their favorite movie. So we made ballots that said, I vote for Israel out of the film festival, and got people to check that and put it in the stuff, the ballot box. And then the next year, we made some postcards. I happen to have a job that enables me to do a lot of color printing. And so I made like 8 different color postcards with images from of the occupation, you know, pictures that I had taken in Palestine and that some of my friends had taken. And we mailed them, we got maybe 500 signed, and we mailed them not like all at once, but like, you know, a dozen or two every couple days, so that they were getting a stream of them for several weeks. And that apparently to them seemed like a really big problem, because someone that we knew who worked there asked them if they were going to take Israeli sponsorship that year, and they said they didn't think they would because it wasn't worth it. Now, we've decided at this point, that was last year, and we've decided at this point that we're not going to press them for a statement, because we're pretty sure if there was a statement to be made, we would not like it. You know, but we feel that this was a really encouraging thing. I mean, it was actually much more successful than we ever anticipated that we would be, and it taught us some things about how we could be most effective, and that's working in our own community. So one of the things, when we sort of started, a year after we started, we had a little retreat, and we said, well, you know, what were our goals for like the next year and then for 5 years and sort of our long-term goals? And one of the Palestinian members of our group said that his goal was that when the history of Palestinian liberation is written, it's going to say that lesbians and gay men and trans people were involved. So at first, we didn't necessarily seem to be doing that well on that particular goal, like achieving that particular goal. Like, event organizers would always kind of forget to put our name on the flyer. Then there was this long period where they would like mention QUIT from the stage, but they could never quite remember what the acronym actually stood for. But we persevered and they learned. And today, if you go to the Miftah site, which is one of the leading English language sites coming out of Palestine, and you look at their frequently asked questions, their facts on divestment from Israel, in the section called Who is Already Divesting or Considering Divesting and From Whom, you'll find kind of a long paragraph about QUIT and the Essay Slaughter campaign right below the Presbyterian Church. And so, you know, we feel like one, we have really made an impact in the movement, not only in terms of promoting BDS in the queer community, but also in terms of promoting queer liberation in the Palestine Solidarity Movement, which is always one of our goals. We always twin those goals. You know, we do not believe that the queer struggle for queer liberation is secondary to a national liberation struggle. We always believe that queer liberation and women's liberation need to be struggled with concurrently with national liberation, and all of the feminists that I know in Palestine agree with that. So, you know, that's part of why we wanted to have a queer group. But the other reason we felt like we needed to have a queer group is because we anticipated the sort of queer washing that was going to start happening, you know, which really sort of came to the fore with the formation of a group called Blue Star PR, which was putting out these images of gay soldiers with the tagline, you know, where in the world can gay officers serve their country? Israel, and things like that. And so because of that, we knew that they were going to be putting out this image that Israel is this progressive liberal country with values like ours that recognize the importance of queer liberation, and because of that, you should support segregation and discrimination. So we wanted to counter that. And every time we go out in public, pretty much we get asked, how can you support Palestine and recommend boycotting Israel when you would be killed in Palestine or any other Arab country? So I just want, with my last couple minutes, to respond, you know, to sort of lay out our response to that question, which I'm sure some of you have probably heard, in brief. First, it's not true. It's not illegal to be gay in Palestine. As far as I know, there's been no effort to make it gay, to make it illegal to be gay. You know, there are laws against being gay in some Arab countries. There are also many in many non-Arab countries. Institutional, individual, and cultural repression and oppression against queer people definitely exists in Palestine, but it by no means exists only in Palestine. It exists in many other countries, including our own. My home state of California just added a gratuitous anti-gay provision to our state constitution. But what we do know is that the likeliest way to break down the antagonism towards hostility towards queer people and to for Palestine to become, when it becomes a country, to become a country where the rights of queer people are respected, is for queer people to be visible in the movement for Palestinian liberation. Not that it should ever be a condition, but that has been the experience of other people, especially in South Africa. The work of people like Simon Nkoli, who was a gay activist with the ANC, and who insisted that the ANC deal with the fact that he was openly gay, you know, definitely had to do with the fact that South Africa became the first country to enshrine the rights of sexual minorities in their constitution. Segregation and discrimination, I'm not using the word apartheid because I understand there's some controversy about that word here, so, you know, but it means segregation and discrimination. So, and I'm happy to use that because it does invoke our own shameful history of apartheid, which we're mispronouncing anyway, is apartheid, and it means separateness. So segregation and discrimination have never helped and always hurt everyone, gay and straight, who experiences it. And specifically in terms of gay people in the occupied territories, the existence of checkpoints and closures means that they don't have the options of other queer people that other queer people might have to get away from small rural areas to larger urban areas where there's more likely to be a scene that is accepting and welcoming of them. And I also would point out when one of the things that's often raised is the fact that gay Palestinians have sought asylum in Israel. And I also want to mention the fact that, you know, those gay Palestinians actually have the right to live anywhere that they want to in mandatory Palestine. So therefore, you know, they shouldn't have to ask for asylum from anyone to live in their own, where they want to live, where they'll be safer in their own land. And I also want to mention that after using their cases very publicly to sort of promote this image of Israel as the savior of LGBT people, Israel actually denied their asylum claims and deported them back to the occupied territories, where presumably, having been publicly linked with the occupying power, they were in more danger. And having said that, I want to say that I haven't actually heard that anything has happened to any of them as a result of the fact that everybody now knows that they're gay. But all of that, having laid it out, hopefully, you know, in a like devastatingly persuasive way to all of you, is ultimately irrelevant. We support human rights, land rights, social and political and civil rights, and the right of return for Palestinians for the same reason we support them for Iraqis, Iranians, Bosnians, Afghans, Kashmiri, Okinawans, Burmese, Haitians, Hondurans, Congolese, and Darfuri, the same reason that we demand and expect our allies in the Palestine Solidarity Movement to stand up for the human, political, and social rights of LGBTQ people everywhere. Regardless of the fact that so many of us are silent on the question of Palestinian liberation, and that is that it's the right thing to do. Human rights cannot be traded in the marketplace. I'll support yours if you support mine. And to treat them as such feeds into the broad conspiracy of global capitalism to turn everything and everyone into a commodity which can be bought and sold, and that clearly hurts all of us. Human rights are, to quote one of the founders of my country, who you might have heard of, Thomas Jefferson, human rights are inalienable. And for that reason, and that reason alone, we support the legitimate claims of the Palestinians to live in peace and security in their own land or anywhere else on this earth that they choose. And we engage in BDS as a time-honored, effective, legitimate, and nonviolent strategy to advance the cause of justice. Thank you very much.